From fresh fruit and veggies to processed ready-to-eat meals, chances are that the food that you buy in your regular shopping trip has been at least considered by a food technologist somewhere along the line, if not engineered somehow. The plastic bag that holds the spring mix, the pasteurized process for fresh milk, that reddish orange, well, salmon color in the flesh of farmed salmon, all of it has been carefully developed and tested by food technologists. And earlier this month at the 2004 Institute of Food Technologists meeting and the Food Expo, thousands of people gathered to discuss their latest advances in all sorts of food technologies and, of course, the direction of the food industry. What is new in food technology? That's what we're going to be talking about this hour. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Let me introduce my guest. Charlie Santerre is an associate professor at the Department of Foods and Nutrition at Purdue University. He's also a science communicator with the Institute of Food Technologists. He joined us now by phone from his office in West Lafayette, Indiana. Welcome to the show, Dr. Santerre.
Good afternoon, Ira.
Tell us, you were at that meeting of the 2004 Institute of Food Technologists a couple of weeks ago. Is there a definition of food technology that you use generally?
Generally, we look at food technology as anything that pretty much occurs after harvest of a fruit or vegetable or harvest of an animal. Mm-hmm. The process that goes on after production and before consumers will consume it.
Give us an idea. We're going to have you be our roving reporter, at least after the fact. what did you see? What are some of the new technologies, new foods that were being shown there?
Well, there are a lot of things going on. One of the things that we're trying to get more of in the American diet is omega-3 fatty acids.
Right.
So several companies were looking at technologies for getting these healthy fats into foods and still keeping the foods tasting as good as they did before they added them. Or even better in some cases.
Well, we've seen eggs in the grocery store that have additional omega-3 in them.
That's correct. In the next 5 years, we'll probably see mayonnaise that would have it, some frozen foods that would have it. Many of our meat products may have it. So we'll be able to successfully increase the intake of this for most consumers.
Is this going to be by adding it to the food that the animals eat?
There are different ways of doing it. You can add it to the animal's food. One way that's being done right now with, say, farmed salmon is it's added into the feed of the salmon. Eventually, we'll start doing more of that with poultry and swine and beef and dairy. Some of that's going on now. But soon, we'll start to create new crops that will have these healthy fats in them. And we'll either eat those crops ourselves or we'll feed those crops to animals and then we'll eat the animals.
1-800-989-8255. We're talking about food technology, 1-800-989-TALK. And if you'd like to talk about new food technology, please do that with us. Other technologies, other new things you saw at the fair?
Well, there's a lot of work going on in food irradiation now.
Is that still not a dirty word, or still is a dirty word?
In the U.S., it's become more and more accepted.
Yeah.
As consumers have been able to go to grocery stores and buy irradiated meats, take them home and see how they last in their refrigerator and how they're safer, they've adopted them quite soundly.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, if we irradiate 50% of our meat products, we can reduce foodborne illness by a million or more individuals, with maybe even a reduction in deaths by about 400 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So the benefits for irradiation, and it's not much different than pasteurization or most of the other processes that go on in the mm-hmm. treatment of foods.
Let's talk about packaging for a second. I think we've seen the death of the tin can, have we not?
No, I think the tin can will be around for as long as you and I are.
Oh, really?
But there are some things that are pretty exciting. If you go in the grocery stores now, you can find these foil-pouched fish products. And I really like the foil-pouched salmon product because it doesn't have much drain and it's much much higher quality. You basically eat all of the contents of this.
Mm-hmm.
But we've put foil liners in many of our packages to help keep the oxygen out and to give them more shelf life, keep them fresher.
Mm-hmm.
We've modified the atmosphere inside of packages to control the amount of oxygen and carbon dioxide, and that also helps to protect the flavor and aroma, everything that you enjoy about a product.
You know, I'm fascinated by these salads that come in bags.
Yeah.
They're not just plain plastic wrapping, are they?
In some cases, they could be, but in most cases, they are a package that helps protect that environment to keep that lettuce from wilting and spoiling. So you can actually buy it all ready to go, and it'll have a shelf life of several days by the time you get it home.
Mm-hmm. There was a new space food packaging technology presented at the meeting, and I'm laughing because it's such an old technology. What could you have new about Tang or whatever they're making that's freeze-dried?
Well, we have to come up with some new techniques if we're going to be able to put astronauts on Mars. The trip to Mars is expected to take anywhere up to 2.5 years, so we have to have foods that can be shelf-stable for that long. Mm-hmm. Now, typically, you go in a grocery store and you buy, say, a breakfast cereal, a dry product. That's expected shelf life is about a year. But we can't afford to send our astronauts up there and have things spoil halfway before they return to Earth. So there's real challenges in how we handle those products. There are many bigger issues with how we maintain the astronauts' bone density and things like that when they're in a weightless environment. But there are also challenges on the food side. Is how do we get them foods that they'll be willing to eat for 2.5 years? And these typically won't be those things that you and I would eat for breakfast or lunch
right.
or dinner.
Well, what about protecting it from radiation that we don't normally have here? If you store it somewhere in a closet in a
yes.
spaceship, it's going to get its own sort of radiation.
Yes, that's one of the more difficult problems. As we go into the outer atmospheres, we get more radiation from the sun, and these can cause the fats that are present in our foods to oxidize or turn rancid. So the worst-case scenario would be to have a food product spoil after only about 2 months of space flight. And so scientists are looking at ways to use packaging in one case to offer a screen for that irradiation, but also have products that would be stable if they were radiated by the sun.
Mm-hmm. Kathleen in Washington, D.C., welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Anna. How are you?
Fine.
Okay. This is going to be a little bit intricate, but here's the situation I'm in. I'm an applied anthropologist, and there's an issue with women, especially in the Hispanic population, of neural tube defects, like spina bifida, et cetera. Well, it turns out that there's a mold that grows on corn called fumonisins, and it blocks folic acid. So, and they've already determined that folic acid helps in terms of these abating these neural tube defects. So one question is, there's an old way of making tortilla that, sort of a nixtamalization that cuts through this mold. And my question is there some sort of trade-off in terms of cultural ways of dealing with food? Let's say the old folks that did it the old way knew what they were doing,
mm-hmm.
Versus some of the new ways such that you're adding more folic acid to, let's say, corn products or something so that you have this ability to do the trade-off between health and issues about health as well as bringing the foods up to speed.
Dr. Santer?
Well, Kathleen brings up a good point. But one other point I'd like to add to her discussion, her observation, is that oftentimes these molds that are present in some of our grain crops were not detected for many years. Another one like aflatoxin that is a mycotoxin-producing mold that
right.
can show up on corn
sure.
had been there for many, many years, and we just didn't know much about it. And this can be very toxic.
From what I understand, it's 1988 in South Africa that they really began to realize that this fumonisins were actually present.
Yes, true. And some of the technology we're doing with food biotechnology is offering alternatives to that by putting in proteins that are toxic to insects, for instance. We're able to reduce the amount of injury that occurs on the corn plant in the U.S., and by reducing that injury that's caused by insects, we reduce the amount of molds that can grow on the corn plant. So there are some of these new technologies that will help to reduce the mold proliferation on the corn plant, but also this new technology will allow us to add more folic acid to the corn itself so that we'll have a better source of folic acid.
Wonderful.
Thanks for calling, Kathleen.
Thank you.
Bye. Have you noticed any backlash against genetically modified foods in the States? Here, farmers are rebelling against growing them because they're having trouble selling them overseas.
Well, there's a difficulty in selling in Europe primarily, but typically the American consumer has been very very supportive of food biotechnology. In the U.S., we're very embracing of new technologies anyway, we look at computer technology or communication technology or air travel, we've always been on the forefront of adopting these new technologies. So that's not really been a problem in the United States, especially now that consumers are really seeing the benefits from these things, that we're starting to have crops that have fewer allergens in there. And anybody who's ever had a child with a severe allergy would like to be able to feed them without having to worry about everything they eat. Well, we're probably about 20 or 30 years away from that point. But being able to have less pesticides applied to our crops is another advantage that consumers really like. So by and large, the American consumer has been very happy to embrace these. Now, the European community has been more reticent to do this, to embrace these, partly because they were not on the forefront of developing these crops. And there are many other reasons involved.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of other reasons involved. We won't get into that right now. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go to Paul in Low Pass, Oregon.
Hi, Ira. How are you?
Hi there.
Hey, I'd like to ask about an old-time technology, old in my lifetime. I'm middle-aged. You know, what about the food colorings, you know, like in M&M's, you know, Blue Lake 9 and Red this and, you know, I was eating those for decades before I read the package. You know, what is the safety record, or have these things ever been tested, these dyes?
Yes, food dyes have to go through between 6 and 8 years of testing to make sure they're safe. Matter of fact, the food colorants are probably some of the most tested food additives that we have in our food supply. And so you can be pretty confident that the federal agencies, the Food and Drug Administration and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, has really taken a close look at these. In addition, scientists and many academic institutions have also looked at these to show that they are safe to consume.
What are they actually made out of?
There's various ways of getting them. Some come from natural plants, and then some are chemically synthesized. Much like many of the things that would naturally occur in your foods. In that case, though, that Mother Nature produces them out in the field with some sunshine, some rainfall, and some fertilizer.
Thanks for calling, Paul.
Thanks.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's move right along here with Sam in Palo Alto. Hi, Sam.
Hi, how are you?
Hi there.
I have a question. If there is any information about technologies for reducing trans fats without sacrificing flavor or shelf life?
I missed that. Reducing what?
Reducing trans fats in foods, fatty acids.
Yes. There's been a lot of activity. Actually, on the expo floor of the Institute of Food Technologists meeting that just occurred in Las Vegas, many food companies are trying to get trans fats out of their products because of a new labeling requirement that'll be implemented in the year 2006. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I would predict that many or most of the trans fats that are in our food supply now will be removed by 2006 because processors do not want to show those on the label.
Well, that's great news. Thanks.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We've seen also the soaring price of salmon. And I saw a story the other day that Alaska salmonmen are just tickled pink, so to speak, because they're getting, you know, $3 a pound where they were getting 50 cents a pound before because people are afraid to eat, you know, farm-raised salmon. And now they're getting the fresher, you know, there's a better market for the natural salmon.
Well, there's been a big debate about salmon in the last couple years. There are some groups who are upset because their markets have been undercut. For instance, the wild salmon from up in Alaska brings premium value in the grocery stores, and it's only available for a few months of the year. That industry has been dramatically impacted because we can now raise salmon in pens in British Columbia, for instance, or in pens down in Chile. And so there have been some groups that haven't liked the fact that we raise salmon because it's been hard on them financially. But most scientific studies now support the fact that farm salmon is very safe, very nutritious. It's actually one of the ideal foods to eat if you want to get the long-chain omega-3 fatty acids into your diet.
We're talking about food technology this hour at Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Although their safety warnings have gone out about how much salmon you should be eating every week or per week.
Well, there's been a couple groups, but by and large, the American Medical Association and these type of organizations have supported the fact that we can save many, many lives in the U.S. As many as 100,000 lives could be saved in the U.S. from sudden cardiac death if we got consumers, middle-aged consumers, to eat more salmon, whether it be farmed or wild.
Or you could just take an omega-3 pill.
You could. There are some slight difficulties with taking a supplement. You get a little bit of a reflux, a lot of people do, from taking a supplement. Plus, you lose the enjoyment of eating the fish itself. Plus, there's also other parts of the salmon, the carotenoids that are in there that give it its characteristic color that are very healthy for us also.
Mm-hmm.
So you never get the same taking a supplement as you would eating a whole food is basic premise for food technologists.
Any changes you saw, you know, in the size and the shape of the food so that they package better? You know, over the years we've watched tomatoes decline in taste so that they can make them firmer and square or whatever shape to fit better in the truck that ships them 4,000 miles from one part of the country to the other?
Well, I guess I would disagree with you a little bit there. I think that the quality of tomatoes in the wintertime have improved dramatically from what I remember 20 years ago.
Because they're coming from South America?
Maybe they're coming from South America, yes. And
yeah,
that's part of the benefits of having an international economy when it comes to food production and processing, is that you can eat strawberries in the middle of February in Indiana, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So we have many, many more choices. For instance, back in 1969 when you went to the grocery store, the number of choices you might have had would be somewhere around 7,000. Today you go to a grocery store and you've got 50,000 choices. So you can really pick those things which are the freshest, that taste the best, and you've got a lot more variety to get a healthy diet.
Mm-hmm. So what would the, I got about a minute left. Anything that we should watch for in the future, any cutting-edge food technology?
Well, there's a lot going on in organic foods, lot of discussion on organic foods. Some people are showing that there are some benefits in some cases, and there's some disadvantages in some cases. I would say that the most exciting research right now is going on related to the healthy fats, and including increasing those in our diet. And you'll see a lot more dedicated toward reducing obesity in this country, since 2 out of 3 mm-hmm. in the U.S. are either overweight or obese. Food technologists are taking this very seriously and trying to offer options for those people trying to keep their weight in check.
And as far as low-carb foods, then?
There's quite a bit in low-carbs. I consider that to be a little bit more of a fad. I'm not sure that'll continue. Most science is starting to show that the Atkins diet, it really works only because it reduces total caloric intake. So it's not much different than other diets, but we're learning that we have to really improve our lifestyle by exercising more if we really want to keep our weight in check.
Well, a topic for another discussion. Thank you very much for joining us, Charlie. Charlie Santerre is an associate professor at the Department of Foods and Nutrition at Purdue University. He's also a science communicator with the Institute of Food Technologists. Thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you, Ira.
We're going to take a break, come back, and switch gears. When we come back, we're going to talk about stem cell research. You know, it's a hot topic. There's some new interesting research going on having to do with neurology. So stay with us. We'll be right back.